everyone, and welcome to the JW Show. I'm your host, Joshua Washington, director of the Institute for Black Solidarity with Israel. And I'm here today with Juanana Abrams. Juanana is a married mother of three beautiful boys born in the Bilibuja village in Ethiopia. She and her family made Aliyah in 1991 when she was three. Juanana holds a BA in communications and MBA and taught English all from IDC Herzliya. She now lives in Netanya and is a graduate student in the Orit Guardians program at Tel Aviv University and volunteers at Negat, an organization that works to place young Israelis of Ethiopian origin in key positions in the Israeli business ecosystem. She recently founded LAB, a private Facebook group with over 2,000 members that encourages young people to learn Amharic. She is thrilled at the prospect of playing a key role in bringing the Orit to academia and is now and knows that it is an important opportunity to learn and transmit the deep wisdom of Beta Israel's religious leaders, which otherwise would be lost to future generations and the Jewish world. Juanana, thank you so much for being here today with us.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. So let's start with Orit Guardians, because that is just in light of recent events, there are a lot of things that happened over the past few weeks. Can you tell us what Orit Guardians is and what is your role? How are you involved with it?
So the Orit in the Giz, it's basically means Torah, like the Bible, the Tanakh. And when you say the Orit Guardians, is basically, you know, the holy scripts of the Beta Israel, the Jews of Ethiopia, never been researched. So the Orit Guardians is a new program at Tel Aviv University in the Bible disciplinary that's starting to study the Orit and bring it to the light, basically, to the rest of the people to understand and know about. So I'm a student there. And it's my first year out of two. As Ethiopian descent, I know how to speak the language, Amharic, but the Orit is written actually in Giz. So it's a whole other language that you need to learn. And Amharic, it came out of Giz. And there was a clear separation between Giz and Amharic. Because the Kesim, which is our spiritual leaders, decided, not just them, but even in the Ethiopian Christianity, you can see that whatever is related to the scripts and the holiness and studying the Bible would be in Giz, and whatever is not is normal day-to-day life would be spoken in Amharic or any other language.
Oh, wow. What is the, are they similar? Yeah. Are the dialects similar or what's the difference?
Well, I'm just starting. I just finished my first semester. And so I learned Giz. So now I can read it.
Oh, wow.
I mean, the letters are similar, but there is different in, there is a lot of similarity, of course, because Amharic generated from Giz. But okay. There is a lot of differences that you need to learn and speak it and read it, basically, to learn more about the differences.
Wow. So is Giz, that's how you say it, right? Giz, you said?
Giz, yeah.
Giz. Is that a, before you studied this and before this, because you said the scriptures have never been researched until really where we are right now.
Yeah, the Jewish ones.
The Jewish ones. Is that language was it a dead language, or is it still spoken, or really is it just in scriptures?
It's only in scriptures. It's not really spoken. Okay. I mean, in Ethiopia, you have I think last time they counted 80 dialects.
Wow.
And there is, you know, some, you know, with the years, some dialects are basically done for, like no one is speaking them, because there is only like there is one dialect, I don't remember the name, but it's only one person, the whole Ethiopia, who speaks it. So you know, once he move on with life to heaven,
yeah.
and then you know, that language, that dialect would die with him. So
wow.
Yeah, so I know that geese you mainly can see only the spiritual leaders speak it, whether it's the Christians or the Ethiopian Jews. So when we go, when Ethiopians go, when is Beta Israel in Israel, right? Go to synagogues that are for the Ethiopian community and led by the Beta Israel spiritual leaders, the leaders would read the Torah and pray in Giz, and the rest of the people would not understand the word. They'll just repeat what they're saying and just like kind of trust and believe, and just they just get the spiritual experience out of it. So it is it's a language that's really taught and maybe spoken only by the leaders, the spiritual leaders.
Wow. So it's then how significant is it then? I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I want to ask you how significant is it that this is being taught now through Orit Guardians? Like this is, I guess the attempt is to make it so that it's not just a very rare language that's only spoken by, you know, one or a few people. Mm-hmm. You know, how big is that?
So the way I look at this, the Orit Guardians have like more reasons and benefits that I believe in. One is, you know, in the academic aspect, where there is a whole bunch of scripts that no one study, research that may shed light into what we know about this the Holy Scripts, right? So everything has been kind of researched, you know, whether it's from German and Greece and English and any other language, Hebrew, of course. But the Ethiopian scripts never been researched. So there is one aspect for it, which is more in the academic point of view. The other point of view, which really kind of drawn me to that, is the social aspect that it brings to Beta Israel, who lives in Israel. You know, when we came to Israel, regardless, I mean, the whole idea of Israel, if you go back to Ben Gurion era, they believe that whenever a Jew come to Israel, they need to speak Hebrew, forget where he came from, and just become this new product, this Israeli, this tzaba, right? So with the years, it changed, because people just could not forget, and it was their heritage, their tradition, things that they've been living for like hundreds and thousands of years. And now we become this multicultural, diverse groups of people who live in Israel, that the common is that we're all Jews, just from different places in the world. So when you look at this from the Beta Israel point of view, the whole connection of the Jewish in Ethiopia and the outside Jewish, like, you know, in the world, it started in like the late 1900, it's like 1880. I don't know if I'm saying it correctly, but this was like the first, those times was like the first encounter between Ethiopian Jews who lived in Ethiopia to other Jews around the world. So the Ethiopian Jews always believe they're the last descent of the Jewish nation. They believe there is no more Jews. It's just us. So when we came to Israel, obviously there is a whole gap, you know, third world country to come to the Israel, you know, all these advanced world. And a lot of the time there is a gap between the parents who came to Israel and the kids. The kids are trying to be part of the general population. And when the parents don't know how to read and write and they cannot really assist them in those matters, there is a gap that created between the parents and the kids. And only when the little kids become adults, they understand that they really need to learn about their past and their heritage. You know, my friend told me that as a yeshiva boy, which is a religious school for boys, when he studied there in his when he was young, you know, in his teenage life and early 20s, he always learned about the Jewish scripts from Yemen, from Spain, from, you know, England, from wherever, right? Mm. And he never had, there was never a contribution to the Jewish of Ethiopia. Mm. And he knows that his parents are so, such a believer, such dedicated to the religious, and the fact that, you know, they kept the religious in for 2,000 years, and it just, it put them in a position where he didn't understand and felt like he had nothing to bring to the table of this discussion. So the Red Guardians is basically, I think it's a really important thing, because then it shows like the culture, the religious aspect, and what kept us Jewish in the diaspora. And I believe it would give a lot of light, and it would be a source of information for the young Jewish generation of Beta Israel and also the rest of the world. So,
wow,
I think it's a very important program, to be honest.
Well, absolutely. I mean, that's groundbreaking. And this is, yeah. How long has it been? Is this its first year, or are you like one of the first students, or?
It is the first year.
Okay.
I know that when the head of the program, Professor Dalit Rom-Shiloni, brought this up to the university that you want to start this route in the Bible studies, it was like it was approved so fast, like the fastest program that approved.
Wow.
So yeah, obviously everyone see the benefit of it on the social aspect, academic aspect. So yeah, it's really nice.
That's incredible. And what you said too about in the 1980s, when the Ethiopians were first kind of introduced to the rest of the Jews in Israel, how the culture was different. It was, you come, you forget about where you came from, and you learn Hebrew, and now there's this embracing of, actually it's quite necessary to know where, like you said, what kept you all Jewish in the diaspora.
Right.
I just think that's incredible. I think for all the diaspora, but particularly for the Ethiopians, like we're talking about, the history is important to Israel, not just to the Ethiopian Jews, but to Israel. Do you think that too, or what do you think?
Yeah, totally. I totally agree with what you said. You know, the fact that the first communication between Jews in Ethiopia and other Jews for the first time was in 1880.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's like really well, you know, in the past. And then it comes to, you know, Dr. Feiklovich, who came to Ethiopia, that he heard about this group of people who's Jewish, and he came to study them and study with them and kind of reconnect them with their brothers who are in a different diaspora. So the whole story of Ethiopians in Israel, Ethiopian Jews in Israel, it's really like long before we're talking about, you know, Operation Solomon and Operation Moses that we all know and aware of. But there is a whole history that it's not really familiar to a lot of people.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wenana, that's so incredible. I want to learn more, and I'm sure our listeners do too. They want to learn more about you. And I know that for those who aren't aware, just a few weeks ago was the 10th anniversary of Baruch Tegnye's passing. We commemorated him. I was able to be there, and I saw you were one of the speakers. And for our listeners, if you could, I mean, for those who don't know, he was very much a pioneer in the Ethiopian Jewish community. He's was one of the main figures behind Ethiopians actually making it to Israel. And you, like I said, you were one of the speakers there, and it was great to see you there and to see you speak. How has his story and his journey affected you as an Israeli of Ethiopian descent?
Well, Baruch Degania was one of the pioneers who actually started this whole connection and relationship with Israel and let them know that there is Ethiopian Jews in Ethiopia who want to come to back to their home, to Israel, to Zion. So without him and other activists like Ferede Aklum and Yona Bugale and so many others, like, that would be totally different. Because he was actually one of the guys that Feiklovich brought to Israel to study Hebrew and send them back. And to be honest, you know, at first Israel was not sure about, you know, the Jewish in Ethiopia and how they're related to Israel and Zion, because there is so, you know, obviously the physical appearance. It's different. Same as Ethiopian Jews in Ethiopia. We never thought that there is a Jew who's white. That was a whole revelation for us when we saw Jews that are white. So the same thing was with Israel, who kind of didn't, it wasn't like the things that they're used to or know. And it was very, you know, Baruch Degania, among others, you know, went and pressured the Israel and the Jewish agency, and went and traveled the world, talk with other Jewish communities to help out and bring these Jews to Israel, to Zion. So I think one of the sad parts is that the Ethiopian community is less of talking about things, but actually go and do things. Like, we're not good at marketing ourselves in a way, if I'll bring it to the modern life. So I remember when I was researching a little bit about my family, I learned that my grandpa had the opportunity to come to Israel in the early 80s, and he refused because he was wealthy in Ethiopia, but not because of the wealth. It's because that the Ethiopian government would capture people, the activists that are in connection with Israel, and I don't know, put them on trial for betrayal of the country or whatever it is. And since he was wealthy and could advocate, he used to bring them to his house and go and advocate for them in trials and release them. So he thought there is greater things to do for him to stay in Israel, in Ethiopia, than go to Israel, because it's so, you know, you were part of this motion of changing something, bring everyone to Zion. So he felt that he can do better in Ethiopia for the cause than bring him just himself and his family. And, you know, we did came to Israel in 1991, but that story, for example, like, I didn't know, it's not something that everyone talk about, you know, in a family gathering or something. It's just, you know, it's something you did, no big deal, and it is a big deal, you know.
It is. That is a great
thing that you want to know.
Right.
So,
did he ever make it to Israel at all before he died?
Yeah, he did.
He
came in 1991.
Oh, he came with you. Okay.
Yeah, we came after him a few months after, but yeah, we kind of came around the same time.
And was it through Operation Solomon that you guys came, or was it through different means?
So we came, my family came 1 month before the Operation Solomon. It was a secret operation that was held by the Mossad, where we would have fake passport. Right. Fly to Italy as if we're going for a vacation, stay there for a night, and then came to Israel. So my arrival to Israel is different than stories people know.
Wow. Yeah. My goodness. And so I know, I mean, you were three, obviously. So, I maybe you don't remember certain things, but, you know, what do you do? I'm sure your parents might have shared some things with you. Like, what was it for them to finally be able to actually make it to Israel or to have the opportunity to travel to Israel?
Well, for them, it was a dream come true, something that everyone has been waiting for generation to generation. I mean, I at one point when I was a teenager, I asked my parents, like, don't you rather just go back to Ethiopia? Because, I mean, we were doing well. To come to Israel and, you know, encounter all this challenges, you know, the language barrier, the fact that you cannot support yourself financially because you don't speak the language. So you have to do, like, I don't know, blue collar job. I don't know how you say it in English.
Yeah, but that's right.
You don't really have much options, right? So I always ask my dad, like, wouldn't you just rather go back to where we lived, where you have your own land, you have your own, you know, property and assets, and everything was good for us over there, even though it was, you know, in third world country, you know, wealth, but it seems like, you know, much calmer, much have more purpose, because here it was like a lot of, I don't know how to say it, a lot of distractions. And they said we wouldn't trade this for anything in the world. Like, the goal was to come here, whether it's difficult or not, whether we're wealthy or poor, this is our home, and we're just happy to be here with our brothers.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah. So I was like, okay.
So do you
still... No trip for me.
Yeah. Do you still feel that way now, or do you understand more of why they feel that way? Now that you're a mother yourself now, three boys.
I mean, I have to say, I definitely believe that and feel that, because I had the experience of living abroad. Like, I lived for 1 year in Los Angeles.
Okay.
When I was 19, doing my national service there for a year.
Oh, wow.
And then I lived in England for a few years. But I just, wherever I went, whether it's on a trip or to live somewhere, I just always felt like that's not my place. Like, it didn't feel like home. Wow. Like, I definitely, you know, manage and, you know, did good, but it still didn't feel like home. My husband is actually from America. Like, he made Aliyah from America, but was born in England, in Manchester.
Oh,
so
wow.
he made Aliyah 1 month before we got married. So yeah, and it, so basically I had the option to either live in the US or live in England or in Israel. And for me, it was like definitely Israel. It wasn't even a question. You know, people are telling me, wait a minute, are you saying you don't have citizenship? I'm like, I don't care about, you know, American citizenship. Like, this is my home. Why do I need another place?
Right.
Yeah, this is just, you know, something that I don't even think about. Because for me, home is Israel, Zion. That's my home.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And so being there in Israel, and I'm gonna take it back to Orit Guardians now. How do your parents feel about Orit Guardians? Like, I mean, just this, I mean, I'm thinking anyway, of this kind of full circle thing of we're in Israel, we finally made it, and now there's a program that actually kind of unearths our culture, like where we actually came from to get to Israel. Have you ever talked to them about that? What do they think?
Well, I remember growing up how my father used to put a huge poster of, you know, the Amharic alphabet and trying to teach us to read it. And we always thought, like, oh, man, it's so difficult. It's not just 22, 26 letters. You're talking about, like, 33 letters that changes
wow.
in every it's not syllable, but there is a lot of letters, basically. What I'm trying to say. Like, it was too much. It was like learning Chinese in a way. Every letter is like a whole art. And we're like, we need to learn Hebrew and English at school, you know? So you could definitely see the pride of where they come from. Mm. And trying to give us the heritage, the culture, and, you know, showing us that you always need to know your past and it's always going to do good. So for them to, now I don't only speak Amharic, I also can write it. So it's a whole, it's, they love it, you know?
Wow.
They're really, really enjoying and proud of it.
Wow. So you told us a lot about Orit Guardians. And it's a lot of valuable information, and it's an incredible program. What can we do to help? Is there anything that we can do to help Orit Guardians in any way to contribute? What can we do?
So, you know, the Orit Guardians is open to anyone who wants to study it. So,
oh, wow.
Academic wise, I would definitely see help in more people being interested in this program and actually come and study this with us. And also help spread the news about this amazing program so it can keep growing and have lots of people researching this so we can bring this whole scripts into English or Hebrew writing. So that's one thing. And also, for me, you know, I have my BA, my MBA, I have my job. So for me to stop all of this and go back to school, is, especially now, you know, with COVID, which is a whole other issue.
Right,
but
right.
If we're putting COVID aside, to go back to school when you're like a parent with kids and bills and all of that. So definitely supporting financially the Orit Guardians program in Tel Aviv University can also bring a lot of help, because that helps supporting the students to learn it and research it. So that's the two options, I think.
Awesome. Wenana, thank you so much just for sharing with us, for the wisdom, for the stories, and for your, you know, sharing your journey with us. I think it's, our listeners really enjoy this, and we really appreciate you for taking the time to do this with us.
Of course. Thank you for having me. Thank you for helping me spread the word about the Orit Guardians.
Absolutely. And if there's anything else that we can do, we will definitely let our listeners know through our email about Orit Guardians and how they can help. So let me know if there's anything else, and I'd love to add it to there. Okay.
Sounds good. Thank you very much, Josh.
Thank you. And thank you all for listening. Once again, this is the JW Show. My name is Joshua Washington, Director of Institute for Black Solidarity with Israel, and I'm signing off.